Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. So happy to be with you today and have on the political right, John Dougal.
Hey, good to be with you.
Yeah, and on the political left, Shireen Gourbani.
Hello, and hi, listeners. Happy you're with us still.
Bringing some great, well, is it great news or just good commentary? I don't know, but we need to go all
the way. Well, if it's us, it's good commentary.
That's kind of.
we're gonna go to Iran again, and I don't know where to start, but...
There's no peace.
And there's still no peace. Oil price is still high. There's something new that Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent has called Operation Economic Outcast.
It's all in the branding.
Yeah. And it's about secondary sanctions on trade related to Iran's oil, shipping, cryptocurrency, gold, and aviation industries.
Hashtag China.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And China's foreign ministry is not happy with this. They're asking the U.S. to return to dialogue and negotiations. Don't you love it? That China's asking us to be more reasonable.
Act rational.
Yeah. Well, no, I think this is pretty interesting because what I see here are, again, decisions made by this administration that are driving up costs for everyday Americans. Mm-hmm. When I think about things like, and I have to say, some of this is a bit confusing to me. Maybe a listener with expertise can write in. I don't know if we have one, but I believe that we have sanctions on gold and aviation industries already. I guess maybe what we're saying is this is like a greater expansion of that.
Yeah, it could be broader, could be deeper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and the big thing we're saying is anybody who's doing deals with Iran, we're going to put sanctions on you.
Well,
and
some of that we already have in place. Yep.
But some is like Russia, and that's partly driven by Ukraine.
But
and
the
so
secondary
forth.
Expands
but,
it.
But, yeah. but China, I don't think we've been as firm with, as forceful, because they've got some power over us as well.
Shireen and John, I think whenever a spokesperson for the Islamic Revolutionary Guard is taking on the U.S., it's not a good thing.
Yeah.
Because normally we wouldn't even hear them. They're just not relevant.
Yeah.
But they're relevant right now.
Yeah, they're relevant.
And the quote we have is, you know, this Revolutionary Guard spokesperson saying the U.S. is resorting to economic warfare after it was defeated on the battlefield. Ooh.
Yeah.
That's going deep, everyone.
Well, that's the message that sells to a lot of folks in that country.
Who knew?
Well, and it's the experience that we're having in this country, right?
Yeah.
Where we see that this has not been the United States is not winning this war. There is a lot left unresolved and still, I think, quite confusing in terms of why exactly our president decided to do this.
Well, and I think Americans get the risk of nuclear weapons and so forth. They get that, but there's a muddled message all wrapped around it, and they're not seeing the end game yet.
Yeah,
we're going to go to the Maple Leaf now, Canada. And you know,
the threat up north.
Well, yeah. John and Shireen, I have never met a Canadian I didn't like.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, think about it. Have you ever met a Canadian you didn't like? Whether it's their music, whether it's just, you know, your association with them.
Are you seeing the ones that sound like Canadians or the ones that you just think are Americans until you find out, you're Canadian?
Am I just remembering, isn't Kevin O'Leary a Canadian? I think there are a lot of Utahns frustrated with him.
Well, fair enough. Fair enough, Shireen. But
Beauty, eh?
Yeah, but my point is that these are our dear, dear friends. And we have this long, long open border, since so to speak. I mean, very casual. Because of our closeness to this country, and look at what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
And both sides, I mean, going after it, but I have a feeling that, you know, the Canadian perspective is being driven by the public, not by this elected official. The idea being that the Prime Minister, Mark Carney, is doing the bidding of his people right
now.
He's
been asked to stand up.
Yeah.
Well, he's got like 75%
they're willing to suffer.
Support behind this. More people are supporting this than actually voted for him.
Isn't that interesting?
And I think, you know, one of my key things is I think Donald Trump is correct in terms of we need to rebuild our manufacturing strength in America.
Mm-hmm.
But he's applied the wrong solution to fix the problem.
Yeah, why don't you go be the USTR? John, because that would be really uplifting.
Take Jameson's job.
Yeah, well, we need another guy that has ties to Utah.
but the key thing from my perspective is, yes, I think we need to manufacture more in the U.S., but we should be encouraging and rewarding companies for being here in the U.S., making it the most favorable place to do business.
Right.
Not creating some trade barriers and punishing folks for doing international
Again,
trade.
I will just say this is another, I would say, misguided. I mean, is it even like a policy perspective? I guess we understand that Trump loves tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
It is driving our debt. We do not have people benefiting from this on the ground. Again, mm-hmm. life is getting more expensive for everyday Utahns because of these decisions. I think back to before the election, re-election of Donald Trump this time, mm-hmm. I remember Natalie saying that you'd been sitting in rooms with people in industry here mm-hmm. in the state, leaders in mm-hmm. the state, who were ultimately believing that the Trump agenda would provide favorable economic conditions mm-hmm. for them. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if they still feel that way. Do you feel like you sit in these rooms?
It's a mixed bag. Yeah, I think it's a mixed bag.
Yeah,
as it is for really all Republicans.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Well, and Canada is going after certain targeted places.
Yeah,
you know, what is it? Bourbon out of Kentucky, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Targeting certain Republican states with pressure on their industries.
Yeah.
So it's not widely impacting Canadians, mm-hmm. but putting pressure points to try and get the message back to the Trump administration.
Meanwhile.
And I was just going to say, but there is protectionist activity in Canada when it comes to like their dairy industries and so forth, some mm-hmm. parts of agriculture mm-hmm. that I think both in the U.S. and in Canada, we should remove
should
those
discuss.
Barriers.
Yeah. Okay. So meanwhile, the USS Abraham Lincoln chugging along, making its way back to San Diego. I would love to be in San Diego when that enters the harbor.
Oh, yeah.
Every time I go to San Diego, I always look at what warships are there. It's just a fascination of mine. And for this one that's been gone for so long, can you imagine being at the unloading dock and watching these people come off?
Come off. Yeah. I mean, again, just as a reminder, these are individuals who have gone quite a long time in the service of our country for what feels like very little good reason, who are being fed soured milk, spoiled, you know, food. At this point, I think they will
sleeping in cubby holes.
Yes, they will be very happy for fresh air, land, and a fresh meal.
I want to be there when they come. I have a trip planned to San Diego really shortly, so I'm going to check. I'm going to keep an eye on this thing.
But report back.
John, do you know enough about geography to know the route that this warship takes?
I have not seen the route.
I think
route
of it should be
back
on the East Coast, but it's coming to the West Coast.
Yeah.
So maybe it's coming through the Pacific.
It must be. Yeah, must be. How about John Curtis, everyone? He is going after it a little bit.
Talking Vietnam.
Yeah, and essentially saying that was a war that wasn't approved by Congress, and now we got another one. And he's basically saying, I can't change what's happened, you know, with the Iran war, but I can change what we do in the future, and I really want this Congress to act and put, I don't know if it's his term, but put guardrails on what this president can do.
I think if he wants to see that, then he should be supporting Democrats running for Senate across this country, because that will happen.
Sure.
But if Republicans maintain control, this will continue to get what we're having now.
Shireen has pivoted to her perspective, John.
This is where I would disagree with Shireen, because it all depends who's in the White House.
Yeah.
If it's a Democrat in the White House, the Democrats don't play the watchdog that they should.
Mm.
Same with Republicans. It's Team R, Team D, respectively. And Congress is supposed to oversee and be a safeguard on the White House, the president specifically. And they're the ones that are supposed to declare war. Now, I recognize the courts have lowered the bar of what it means to declare war. You know, mm-hmm. providing funding, other things like this may count as a declaration of war in one form or fashion. But I think, you know, this is where Congress, regardless of the party, really needs to step up and do their jobs and provide that oversight.
So I don't know if the two of you have seen the numbers, but we've had 28 servicemen killed in this conflict.
Yeah.
And a shocking to me, 750 wounded.
Wounded.
Now, so I like to put perspective
and
on numbers.
More of the 28 killed, but not the over 700 that are wounded.
Yeah, so I think put 100 people and then another 100 people. Then another 100, and you're not even halfway there. I mean, that's how I kind of try and internalize that number. I mentioned on our show before that you go to the Walter Reed Medical Center, and that's where a lot of these people end up. And that's true service to our country, but you want it to be service with meaning, Shireen?
Yeah, I do.
With
I know
purpose.
You do, too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, before we take a break, let's talk about the debt hitting the big ding, 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 40 trillion number. My goodness.
Gee. Debt deficits don't matter. I think Dick Cheney, didn't he say that?
Yeah, sadly. Half of this, you two, has been accumulated in the last decade, just to give you a sense of how shocking the numbers are.
Well, and that number is shocking enough, but when you think about what it takes to service the debt, that's what's even more shocking, that we're paying more to service the debt than we're paying for national defense.
Yeah, so a way to think of that is what percent of the budget is going to interest payments. It used to be, in my way of thinking, maybe 4% or 5%. I know in 2019 it was 8%. 2025, 15%. This is the real problem, because there's two problems. One is it makes higher interest rates because it takes money off the table that the private sector needs.
Right.
and that raises rates. And then the second problem is it crowds out other federal spending because you're spending so much on the payments on the debt that you're not able to do the things that you need the federal government doing, like the federal interstate system, just as an example.
Said the transportation commissioner.
I'd love to have done human capital.
Well, I tell folks, think about it. It's kind of like your credit card.
Yeah.
Payments are more than your mortgage.
Yeah.
To a certain extent.
It's crazy.
Bring it to your family
so,
budget.
Shereen and John, I was at an American Enterprise Institute summit recently, and they had two people from Doge on stage, two of the more senior tech people that helped with Doge, and they kind of made their case. And it was not a good look, I'm just saying. These were
that,
really
that
bright,
making
smart.
Making the case that they were successful
yep,
as Doge
yep,
or
they,
that it
yep,
was, needs
the,
to continue?
That they thought this was an incredible opportunity and they took their computer skills. These are like the Elon Musk types,
yeah.
right? That
right.
went in and used AI to do all sorts of things. And then just, they admitted that some things were like the chainsaw on stage and the, the email that you have to put the five things that your job,
yeah.
the purpose of your work, whatever it was, that those were kind of hokey. But they were defending their work. And I'm just sort of like, What did it do? Like
very little. And in fact, what it did is has resulted in mass destabilization when it comes to our ability to, for example,
forecast the weather.
Think about the investments. I know that USAID is not something that we talked about a lot when that initially happened, but the investments that we make in a stronger world through USAID dollars are they have massive returns considering how little we actually spend there, gone. Thinking about the ways that this administration just let an absolute maniac buy his way into power by supporting Donald Trump's candidacy and then get in charge to basically just disrupt everything and make it worse. I just keep thinking about, remember the worm fly or whatever? We just think about all of these terrible things. How many outbreaks what can we buy at the grocery store anymore mm-hmm. that's safe? Like mm-hmm. we have put absolute maniacs in charge and we're suffering for it.
And I come from the perspective where I think the federal government is seven times bigger than it needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore the concept of DOGE was good in theory,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't understand the problem they were
building
stepping into.
Data centers is good in theory.
They tried
but
to.
It matters how you do it.
They tried to. They didn't fully know how to roll it out. Didn't know how to make it have lasting power, and really establish itself
yeah.
in the long term.
Let's take a short break, and we'll be right back. Shereen Gurbani, John Dougal, and Natalie Gochner. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. That's BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shereen Gurbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Shereen and John, I have one more thing to say about the debt,
okay.
and that is that...
Just one more thing.
The Social Security Trust Fund goes bankrupt. The current estimate is by 2032. Now, it's always been so far out in the future for me, but 2032, because it's 2 years before we host the games,
yeah.
we're already in like planning mode, for the
uh-huh.
games.
Uh-huh.
And within
the
this
Olympics,
very
yeah.
short yeah, planning horizon, Social Security's going to go bankrupt. So that's going to be a reckoning moment, and I hope...
This is where we've had time and time and time to adjust,
yeah.
and we just...
change the retirement age, increase the contributions, and let's just be honest, this is a problem of both Republicans and Democrats, and it's a problem of both spending and taxing. I know you won't agree with me on the taxing, but I think that.
I think it's also a problem of priorities, because we will seem to endlessly find money to engage ourselves in meaningless war, but we cannot seem to solve the problems of what happens and do people deserve to retire with dignity in this country.
Okay.
Well, and I would rather get the money, like I said, out of D.C. The more money that's back there, the more they'll spend, the more in debt we're going to get, regardless. That's just what's going to happen.
Flock cameras, you two.
Yeah.
We can take this so many
what
places. What a pivot. The word that comes to my mind is liberty as I think through this.
There's Flock. And then don't forget, there's the Ring doorbell camera backlash
yeah.
and other things like
yeah.
that. So, but keep going.
Well, you're the one that said it. Flock's the new data center. Expound on that, John.
Well, I mean, we were talking just briefly before the show about different places where you're seeing pushback in the public.
Yeah.
And when I started raising concerns about Flock cameras, I think it was just tail end of COVID. So about 5 years ago, nobody really seemed to care. And I was concerned about what kind of controls and abuses. I see the potential for some benefit, but not open-ended storing data for, for parking violations, maybe 24 hours, but no need to store that for 30 days or longer.
Or years, yeah.
And why do we need to share it with other places? I mean, in Salt Lake City, Salt Lake City PD was sharing their database with, I think it was the city of LA.
Yeah.
And it's like, but LA couldn't share theirs with us because of laws in California. And it was just this screwy kind of thing. Shereen, but right now the public is waking up saying, wait a second, where is this going? Who has access? What's happening? There's getting reports in places like Georgia where there's been abuses, where officers have been following their status of their ex-girlfriend or ex-spouse to see what they're doing, spying on them.
Wow. I mean, this is like real reporting. So the Utah Civic Compact found that a record of 10 Flock cameras installed in one county, so this is in Weber County,
where Ogden is,
were searched more than 5 million times between February 2022 and July 2026, with the vast majority of those searches, nearly 97%, coming from police agencies outside of Utah. The top agency tapping into surveil us is the Houston Police Department in Texas, with more than 400,000 searches. Why?
In Weber County, you're saying?
In Weber County. That's here. That is here. Just like you were talking about, kind of trying to think about what these numbers actually mean. Why on earth are we allowing outside police agencies from 45 states, so nearly every other state, to surveil in on Utahns? And Houston
can't use the excuse of LA, which is I-15, and we're trying to monitor stolen vehicles or kidnappings on I-15.
No.
You can't even use that argument.
No.
So we have something called the Utah Privacy Governing Board and the Utah Privacy Commission.
I sit on that board.
Okay, John, look at Mr. Libertarian.
I'm on the governing board.
Well,
and I used to be staff to the Privacy Commission.
Okay, well, so should we feel more comfortable here in Utah?
No. I mean, this is one of those things. Folks are finally starting to wake up.
Uh-huh.
I don't think legislators were there last session or the session before in terms of fully being aware, but the public is now starting to express their concerns.
Yeah,
and. The law enforcement argument is people will die but for this technology. And there is a certain element of truth, and that's why there's this balancing. Like I said, there's benefit to the technology, but you need to have good controls to limit any privacy abuse that might come out of it. Yeah. You know, if you hold the data for one day and you have the person that does the triple murder in Wayne County and you see that the vehicle is in Colorado, you can respond quickly.
Yeah,
but you probably don't have to hold the data forever with the privacy risks that come with that and the potential abuses.
I do think that it's important to note that Utah does have laws regulating automatic license plate readers with a default ban on them unless they're used by a law enforcement agency to capture license plate data in four instances. Those include as part of an active criminal investigation, to apprehend someone with an outstanding warrant, to locate a missing or endangered person, or to locate a stolen vehicle. So there are already provisions. I think the question is, what's happening with outside entities outside of our state that do not have to follow our state regulations are in this data? And I also think this is actually quite broad.
Yeah. Well,
and people are going to wake up to not just the cameras that are mounted on poles.
Yeah.
But now Flock came out with a drone.
Yeah, it raises
the
issue.
So you can watch that. And it doesn't just look at the license plate number. It can also detect and monitor, you know, dents in cars and other things like that to track vehicles along the way.
Yeah. It raises the issue, Shereen and John, about these either stealth or sneaky issues that are sitting behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Data centers pop, now Flock's coming. But what do you think in there?
Like, earlier, we saw how the data centers impacted the primary election we just had.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are these sneak issues to you, Shereen?
I think there are a number of them that have to do with the ways in which, and I hope that a lot of Utah Republicans, and I think, John, you've like long actually been on, I would suggest maybe we'd be on a shared side. I would say it's the right side of some of these issues that have to do with really what is the appropriate role of government and how deep into your private life should they be. I also think there's a very real question to be had about what has happened as we have put Republicans in control over and over again in this state and see rising energy costs, cost of living continuing to expand, real questions about what's happening in our schools. Like, there is a lot, I think, to be questioned. And I do think Utahns kind of generally are a little frustrated with the way that our legislature here has inserted itself into your life and into making decisions about if a data center is good in your backyard or not.
Yeah.
I think one of the issues that will bubble up, and I'll disagree a little bit with Shereen in terms of the quality.
We agree on some things, not on others. That's
the quality
point of
how the state is run. I think we generally do a much better job than many other states, but there's lots of areas for improvement. But I think tax policy, There's a lot of folks that are agitated right now about property tax increases. We're going through Truth in Taxation, and a lot of folks are saying, it's hard for me to put food on the table. The cost of living is just, you know, too much.
Yeah.
And now I'm seeing government doing tax increase after tax increase after tax increase. Enough's enough. And so that's one of those that may pop come November.
Well, it's a short amount of time between now and the midterm.
I tell folks we would have a very different tax policy if elected officials had to collect taxes door to door the day before the election.
That makes sense. Shereen and John, I had a visit from Kent Davis. This is the Republican candidate for Salt Lake County District Attorney. I'm at a concert, and he's a listener.
Hey, Kent.
Yeah. And
thanks for listening, Kent.
Yeah, he's a former deputy district attorney. He's an Army combat veteran, a public defender in Arizona, done work in felonies, domestic abuse, cyber crime.
Sharp guy.
But it was just a reminder to me of, we keep talking about Donald Trump and all these things, and then right here at home, there's like these elections about ready to be right front and center. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was interesting to become more aware of who Kent Davis is, what he's doing. We all know Sim Gill. This is the guy challenging him.
Yeah. And Sim, we did an interview with Sim, so you can listen back and kind of hear, you know, his perspective on how he approaches the work. I think this is what I would just say is, I feel like we are in a really interesting time with what is happening in Utah. And I just want to ask listeners, I think we may have good Republicans out there. It is critically important that we have some balance and accountability in the state, mm-hmm. and one party control does not allow for that.
And John, your rebuttal?
Well, John, I have to say, before you answer, you're a person who was widely known and often respected by Democrats in office because you were willing to work across the aisle on issues that improved people's lives.
I think we work with anyone on good policy.
On good policy. Yeah. We are, unfortunately, I think we have some folks that are kind of slipping further and further right, where ideology is more important than serving Utahns.
So could this be a stealth issue? Like, could it be that there's brewing?
Yeah.
In the Utah, you know, voter psyche that we want change.
Well, I think right now, I think we talked about this last time, there's an anti-incumbent push right now. But at the end of the day, folks default back to their parties. And this is one of the interesting things. The Republican Party's in transition, and it doesn't fully know what its principles are right now.
Yeah.
The Reagan versus the Trump crowd.
Yeah.
And then you have the same thing going on with the Democrats right now. You've got the Democratic Socialists of America versus, you know, the kind of more moderate, progressive or liberal Democrats. And there's kind of feuding between them, and that party's in transition. So I think for a lot of folks, they're not saying, you know, either one. So they're just kind of probably going to default to their established traditional party.
Yeah. I think what they see is a pattern of this legislature working to, in some ways, in really big ways, I would say create change, in fact, chaos in our judicial system, to do very little to really push back against the Trump administration, to gleefully give away our public lands. And I wonder if people are tired of it.
But to be fair.
Gleefully give away our public lands?
Fair,
the public
Shereen,
lands that are public lands, even when we change the classification?
To be fair, our president is giving the White House press corps a 40-minute tour of all that's happening at the White House. From
at least it wasn't a three-hour tour.
A new helipad that's made out of granite and marble, and even a million-dollar donation from Scott's Miracle-Gro to help with the grass.
The grass. This is just a person who is not focused on improving the lives of Utahns, and it really is frustrating to me that we have, you know, a Republican Party, well, I would say specifically in it at the federal level, though I think there are certainly strains of it at the local level, that simply cannot say, call a spade and say what is happening with this
Trump
president.
Trump is the master of trolling the media. And the fact that we actually have a story on this, to me, just says he's still trolling them.
Okay. We got to transition to something maybe a little bit more fun.
Tell us something fun.
Well, it's not fun, but it's someone we should honor. Dolly Parton.
Yes.
80 years old, passed away this week.
Dolly passed away?
Yeah, you didn't know that.
I'm worth telling you in real time. Dolly's gone.
Dolly's gone.
She's not working 9 to 5 anymore.
That's right. And the thing that's so interesting to me about her is, you know, the way I first became familiar with her was not as a woman of substance. And then when I started to follow her, I realized how deep her thinking is and just how gracious of a performer and leader she is.
Huge investments in reading programs across this entire country,
including
here.
That sounds just like her.
I think one of those loved regardless of where they were on the political spectrum.
True. Probably one of my favorite quotes, which I just shared on my social media today, is from Dolly. Figure out who you are and do it on purpose.
Wow. I played Dolly in a high school assembly.
Stop. stop. Tell us everything you can in 1 minute.
It'll involve balloons. I'll just leave it at that.
I don't get it.
Okay, that's
oh,
okay.
My goodness. Okay, well, just a absolute relentless philanthropist. She gave significant investments when it came to finding a COVID vaccine. When we think
great
about
performer.
Huge performer. In fact, the only time I've ever seen her was down at UVU.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
She performed there.
Wow.
Okay.
Cool.
She's performed here a few times. Well, that's
Natalie,
a wrap.
Dolly, yeah. Take us away.
Yeah. Well, thanks everybody for listening. Shereen Gourbani, John Dougal. Program's produced by Anthony Scoma. We hope you have a great day, everyone.